This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Karen Reed back in court for another motions hearing on Thursday, the 6th of February, 2025. Reed accused of driving drunk and hitting her Boston cop boyfriend, John O'Keefe, then leaving him to die in the snow. Let's go to the courtroom and take a listen to that hearing.
To save me time, does your expert in his affidavit say that this information was erased or that it wasn't there?
Wasn't there.
Okay.
It was erased by an operation of automation.
But do I bother reading your expert's affidavit again so it's not in there?
And I'll address what our right. concerns are in my oral statement.
All right. I'll hear you.
May I?
Yes.
The court started by asking, what is it that the defense is asking for? Basically, we're asking to be treated equitably and fairly. This really is an issue of equity, an issue of fairness. And the court maintains this court maintains the inherent authority to issue sanctions when there is an injustice. And those sanctions can include something like cost-shifting sanctions. And there's a body of law that exists that deals with this exact thing. And that body of law includes the case of the Committee for Public Counsel Services versus the Attorney General. That's at 480 Mass 700. It's a 2018 case. The court may remember what was, I think, pretty widely known here in these parts, which was the Amber scandal. Had a bunch of cases going back from 2010 all the way through.
I'm very familiar with the case.
All the way through 2018, and it culminated with Justice Gaziano discussing in his opinion, single justice opinion, exactly these types of things. And what Justice Gaziano said held was, quote, the Attorney General does not dispute that the court has the authority pursuant to Rule 14, sub C, sub 1, to impose remedial monetary sanctions for a discovery violation. And he cites Commonwealth v. Firth, indicating that sanctions may be imposed under Rule 14 for failure to comply with discovery obligations, and sanctions should be tailored appropriately to cure any injustice resulting from a party's noncompliance with its discovery obligations. So the real question before the court today is has Ms. Reed suffered any prejudice based on blatant discovery and Brady violations by the Commonwealth? And the answer to that question is a resounding yes, she has. Your Honor, Ms. Reed, as the court knows, is on trial for her life, and she's been expending precious resources for some 3 years now defending herself against provably false allegations. And at the center of that storm of defense are these Sallyport videos. It should be pretty straightforward, really. I mean, it's just a series of videos at a particular location for a particular time, and that time is January 29th, 2022, from midnight until 11:59. It's 24-hour period, 23 hours and 59 minutes. Should be pretty simple, but it has been anything but simple in this case. We've been asking for a full download of every single one of those cameras and all that footage from January 29th, 2022, from 12 a.m. to 11:59, but we've never gotten it.
When did you first seek it?
We asked for the preservation on February 2nd, 2022, when Mr. Iannetti said retain and maintain all physical evidence. We've been seeking these videos since well before the first trial. We didn't get them before the first trial.
Do you have a date? Do you have any chronology for me?
I don't. I can certainly provide those, but it's been...
I'd like that. I mean, that would be...
I'll be happy to do that. It's in discovery request after discovery request after discovery request. Basically, there's also a catch-all. We've been asking for all physical evidence concerning video footage from Canton PD from well before the trial. We didn't specify which cameras because we didn't know which cameras had video footage. We didn't know how many cameras there were. But we didn't get anything from the Commonwealth. And I'll address that in particular in just a second. Mr. Lally didn't give it to us before a full download, before the trial. The Commonwealth didn't provide it during trial. And today, as I stand here, we still don't have it. And interestingly, Mr. Brennan does make mention in his opposition that, quote, at no time has the defense ever made a formal preservation request. I found that interesting for two reasons, and I have two comments about that. First, as the court record reflects, on February 2nd, 2022, I just referred to it, Mr. Yannetti filed a preservation demand for, quote, all physical evidence to be maintained. That DVR, the footage on the DVR, is physical evidence that was required, not requested, but required to be maintained by the Commonwealth pursuant to that demand. But second, and this is probably more important, it wouldn't have mattered if we didn't ask for it to be maintained. It wouldn't have mattered if we didn't ask for it to be preserved. This was a self-executing duty by the Commonwealth. As Justice Gaziano stated in the same case, the Committee for Public Counsel, quote, a prosecutor's core duty is to administer justice fairly. To fulfill that duty, a prosecutor is required to turn over exculpatory evidence to a defendant without regard to its impact on the case. With failure to disclose evidence favorable to an accused that is material, either to guilt or to punishment, is a violation of due process. Litigation strategy plays no role in this process. Under our rules of professional conduct, a prosecutor is required to make timely disclosure to the defense of all evidence or information known to the prosecutor that tends to negate guilt of the accused or mitigate the offense. And he cites Massachusetts Rule of Professional Conduct 3.8, subsection D. The Commonwealth's Brady obligation is self-executing, Your Honor. It wouldn't have mattered one whit if we didn't ask for that footage, but it turns out that, in fact, Mr. Yannetti did ask that it be maintained. And the Commonwealth has still failed to preserve it. What we have gotten, it appears, are scraps and fragments of videos that the Commonwealth has decided within their own time frame to dole out to us over the course of months and years. And included in that scrap and fragment was a video that was missing 42 minutes. The court is well aware of this video. It was heavily litigated and heavily referenced at the first trial. That's the exact time frame. The missing portion is the exact time frame that the SUV was being pulled into the Sallyport. We got that video on April 4th, just days before the first trial. Keep in mind, it's a video from January 29th, 2022. Another one of those videos was the inverted video that has now seen some fame, that the Commonwealth tried to sell to the jury as a true and correct copy of a video within the Sallyport, and we got that one after the trial started, in the middle of trial. So why were we getting videos from January 29th, 2022, 2.5 years later? And why were some of those videos altered or manipulated and not in their proper format? We still don't have answers to those questions. And literally, while we're asking that question and while we're pondering that question, a couple of days ago, we're getting yet more videos, scraps, piecemeal. We got another Sallyport video just a few days ago, this one showing the Lexus backing into the Sallyport from some exterior camera. And that also is exculpatory evidence. Mr. Brennan writes in his opposition that the idea that the defense has been misled or was misled in its efforts to try to go secure that DVR footage is a distortion of the facts with, quote, no legal merit. Really? A distortion of the facts with no legal merit? Where's all this footage coming from if not the DVR? It's the only place it was held. It's the only place it was captured. So of course we were misled by continually getting these piecemeal snippets of footage from the DVR, from the very source, had to have come from there, coupled with the Commonwealth saying, and Mr. Brennan saying, yeah, come on out, you can have your expert come out, meet us at Canton, we'll provide the DVR, you can have him look at it, he can bring his equipment, download whatever you want from that 24-hour period. So what were we to believe? That it was on the DVR. It had to be. How else were we getting these piecemeal videos? And they've had that DVR for 3 years. They knew exactly what was and what was not on that DVR. They had to have. This has been the center of a storm that surrounded this case from the jump. And to claim otherwise, it's just patently absurd. So Mr. Brennan also wrote in his opposition that Mr. Jackson said, don't touch the DVR, don't mess with it. So I informed Chief Rafferty, tell your staff, don't touch it, don't mess with it, almost suggesting, intimating that it's my fault that we didn't know what was on the DVR. That's absurd also. How am I supposed to know what is or isn't on the Commonwealth's DVR? What I actually said, that was a sort of a liberal interpretation of the facts. What I actually said was, Mr. Brennan, do me a favor if we're going to come out there. Just don't have anybody download it in advance. Let's do it all together when we're all in the same place. That's what I said. And he accommodated that. He said, sure, we'll agree to that. So based on this history of getting these small clips from January 29th, we knew there had to be more footage. So when Mr. Brennan came on board, we made the request to him as well as the requests that we had made to his predecessors. We want all the footage for that 24-hour period. And lo and behold, we started getting more clips, more snippets, more piecemeal bits and bytes from that DVR. And one of them was a clip of Brian Higgins standing out in front of Canton Police Department in the parking lot in the freezing cold at 1:35 in the morning on January 29th on his cell phone. To punctuate the importance of that video footage, recall that this issue was raised at trial. We talked extensively. When I say we, both the Commonwealth and the defense, me in particular, spoke with Mr. Higgins about this issue. It was raised at trial, and Brian Higgins never once, not once, on direct examination or on cross-examination, admitted to having made a phone call in the middle of the night on January 29th. And yet now, after the trial, we get a video of him doing exactly that. And that also proves that he lied in front of a federal jury, in front of a federal grand jury, when he testified that he didn't have or make any phone calls in the middle of the night. That is called exculpatory evidence, and that's Brady evidence, and it was withheld in its entirety during the first trial and for the last 3 years. And it's against that, the reason I bring that up, Your Honor, it's against that backdrop that we then say to Mr. Brennan, kindly give us the footage. I don't want this piecemeal thing to keep going on. Just give us the raw footage. We'll send an expert. So the plan was put in place, and experts were retained, and flights were booked, and hotels were reserved, and transportation was arranged, and all at Ms. Reed's expense. She's writing the check for all of this. And our expert flies out to Canton, walks into the room, and within 10 minutes, they open up the front plate of the DVR, and lo and behold, the Commonwealth says and agrees, oh goodness, there is no footage. It was overwritten within 30 days. What? How could that possibly be? So the expert calls me. Mr. Jackson, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know. I'm not a tech. That's your job. I don't know what to do. If it's overwritten within 30 days, I don't know, maybe there's a log. Let's find out who has access, whose digital fingerprints were on that DVR, who downloaded the footage, when it was downloaded. What about these clips that we have? I'm very confused. So the expert goes back and says to the technician for the Commonwealth, Colleen Crawford, well, let's at least download the log. At least we can have access to that and we can start unraveling what's going on here. Oh, sorry, that's been overwritten as well. There is no log. You get no footage, you get no log. This was a complete and utter waste of time. According to the Commonwealth, that system, as I said, overwrites every 30 days. So by February 28th, I counted them, by February 28th, 2022, every single frame of that footage should be gone. So how did we get the inverted video in April of 2024? How did we get the video clips of Brian Higgins in October of 2024? How is that possible? The only explanation, Your Honor, is that the Commonwealth downloaded the entire system within the first 30 days. Otherwise, it's gone, admittedly. And all of that has been withheld from us for 3 years. Then to add salt to that wound, the Commonwealth allows us to go on this wild goose chase, spend $12,000-some-odd of Ms. Reed's money, and fly an expert out to Canton for absolutely no reason. Zero. The 30-day overwrite protocol is something that their technician absolutely would have and should have and did know before we ever set foot in Canton. She was well aware of exactly why we were going out there. We were going out there to download footage from 3 years earlier. She knew it. We knew it. Mr. Brennan knew it. Everybody knew it. But within 10 minutes of walking in the door, it was revealed that there, in fact, was no footage. And that's a fact that the Commonwealth had to have been aware of for the last 3 years. Yet Karen Reed is the one having to foot the bill for what turned out to be just a snipe hunt. It's not fair, and the Commonwealth should reimburse her for this fool's errand that was not of our making, of her making. The Commonwealth has since told us, Mr. Brennan told us, that remarkably he went to Canton PD, and this is in his opposition paperwork and his declaration, and he spoke with some officer. And that officer told him that he, the officer, personally made a copy of the entire January 29th video footage and placed that copy in some sort of an iCloud account. Not on the DVR system, not in the official data bank in which it's supposed to be stored, but on some iCloud account. And we're finding out about this in 2025. It's outrageous. What it is this entire situation surrounding this DVR and the Commonwealth's maintenance of that DVR and the footage on it is a complete dumpster fire, and Ms. Reed has to pay for the fire extinguisher. And that's not fair. The High Court and the Committee for Public Counsel, the same court, the same case that I referenced a little bit earlier, and the court will know this because this was sort of the big takeaway from that case, is Justice Gaziano fashioned a cost-shifting remedy against the Commonwealth and for the defense. And that included the entire cost of investigating and locating and contacting nearly, I think it was 10,000 defendants. It was an enormous amount of money and an enormous undertaking. And the Commonwealth had to foot that entire bill. And the reason they had to foot the entire bill is because the Supreme Court decided that it was prosecutorial discovery violations and cost-shifting remedies were in order. We're asking absolutely no more than that from this court. Fairness dictates that Ms. Reed be reimbursed. And I'll submit, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Brennan.
It's notable that the defense purposely conflates two very separate issues. If you had a chance to read their motion, they suggest that they should receive costs because they hired an expert, came to Canton, and didn't receive the information they wanted. Yet today in the argument, they try to give you a historical complaint about the production of videos in this case. That is a separate issue. That's a Rule 14 issue, but that is not the motion before the court. The reason I suggest they conflate the issues is because they know their merit for costs. I mean, their motion for costs has no merit whatsoever. And so what they're trying to do is incite facts, invoke this injustice they've created, so that the court looks at the motion that they actually filed and gets it distorted. It is disappointing to stand before a court and file an affidavit as an attorney and have someone else have a cross affidavit. Frankly, in my career, when that has happened on rare occasions, I find that embarrassing. There is very skilled and able attorneys in this courtroom, and to work out discovery matters and agreements is something that attorneys always should do. And that is what I've tried to do in this case. I have tried to give the defense the best opportunity I can to get whatever information they want, whether it is required or not required. Yet, I'm standing here today, and I have to now share with you my conversations with the defense. I have to share with the court my position, which is contrary to the defense, because they have lodged a motion asking for money that they are not entitled to. If I stand back and do nothing and remain the dignity of the court, then what happens is there are claims that just float out in nowhere, and a lie unchecked becomes the truth. So now I must stand before you, and I must tell you what happened. When I entered this case in September, and I began to look at discovery, I saw a video produced in August from the Canton Police Department, and we immediately turned it over to the defense. I began a study of the case and tried to articulate and account for all evidence and make sure the defense obtained everything that they were entitled to and more. The defense asked me to try to account for the video because they believed it had been an issue in this case. I looked through the docket. There was no motion to preserve videotape. I read the pleadings. Attorney Yannetti was meticulous in his motions to preserve. It was admirable. It was meticulous, the work he did. There was no motion to preserve, and that has some import. It doesn't relieve the government of their obligation to provide Rule 14 discovery or exculpatory evidence or Brady evidence. It doesn't relieve the Commonwealth of their obligations to be dutiful, but it is difference in kind. Because the defense, if they want something that is not obvious, they put the Commonwealth on notice. Having practiced for almost three decades, you file motions to preserve within 24 hours, 48 hours, or 30 days. And so when Mr. Jackson called me, Attorney Jackson called me, and he said he wanted to come out and bring an expert to look at the NVR or DVR of the Canton Police Department, I had never seen that in 30 years. It's not part of our obligations. He's not entitled to come into the Canton Police Department with his own experts and download his request. But in the spirit of transparency and an effort to help the defense so there will be a fair trial and they can obtain all the discovery, understanding the history of this case, seeing that there was an August videotape post-trial, I wanted to do what I could to accommodate them. So without any hesitation, despite that there was no court order, no motion to preserve, I invited him to come to the Canton Police Department. I called the chief of police. I asked the chief of police, although this was unique and novel, unprecedented, could the defense come and access their material? Typically, the Commonwealth will download it and provide them a copy. She had no hesitation. So I called Attorney Jackson back, and I said that we would allow it. Attorney Jackson expressed concern, understandably, being a defense attorney, that almost 3 years later, the video may not be on the NVR. I had the same concern. I want all of the evidence. I'm not looking for evidence that's good for the Commonwealth or helpful for my case. I want all of the evidence. And so after he expressed the concern, I made clear I had no idea what, if anything, was on the NVR. We could go and look at it, but Mr. Attorney Jackson didn't want that. He wanted his expert to be the person to open the NVR. And respecting his position, providing a professional courtesy, I agreed. I didn't mislead him. I didn't think there would be video. I had no idea. So Mr. Jackson, Attorney Jackson, pardon me, sent out his expert. And by the way, the expert that came was not the expert they designated. I got a call because we were in court on a hearing that they had sent a different expert they hadn't noticed. And my response was, it doesn't matter. Whoever they send, let them look at it. And so when they did, not surprisingly, the information had been overwritten. Now, while there was a 30-day overwrite on that machine, I believe the defense expert knows that there was a backup hard drive which kept materials longer than that 30 days. I do know that there was materials on that DVR, NVR, back in July of 2024, and I know that from a report that was generated by the Commonwealth and given to the defense, so they should know that as well. That may be one reason why they wanted to come out. They came out on their own volition. I extended the courtesy as much as I could, made no promises. I was clear I was very uncertain about what would be on there since I never looked at it. After I learned there was no information on the NVR, I took the initiative and went to the police department. I viewed the police department, the cameras. I spoke to personnel and I spoke to the retired individual who then was responsible for providing video upon request. And when I spoke to him, he told me in conversation that he would routinely store a copy on a file he noted as a detective file or on his hard drive. That was news to me. I thought that was helpful, so I notified the defense about my conversation. I was not trying to lure them back to Canton or have them spend money. I was trying to, as I always do, be as transparent as I could and as helpful as I could. Now, what I simply should have done and could have done is I could have gone to that detective file and downloaded the video and given a copy to the defense. That's my obligation, no more. But I didn't. I extended the courtesy that if they wanted to come and look at that file before we opened it, so it could be beyond reproach, they were invited to do that. I wasn't encouraging or luring them. I was inviting them because they had already been part of the process. I thought it would be disingenuous not to let them participate. And what they told me is to wait. So now that information, whatever it is, I don't know because I haven't seen it. And I've asked the detective or the retired detective not to access it. It is sitting in that file, supposedly. So at this point, it's the Commonwealth's position that we are going to go and download that information and give a copy to the defense. The defense waited almost 3 years. The defense was very clear about my uncertainty would be on that tape. And now they stand before the court and they try to parlay this into some type of injustice for their cause. The case they cite, Commonwealth versus Frith, the district court was overruled in assessing costs because there was no egregious violation. This is not a Brady case. This is not a setup. This is the government providing information as the case progresses and evolves and changes and retools. So what we have now is information, supposedly, on a database that we are going to get and give to the defense. You should deny their motion. Nobody was misled in this case. They've taken a professional courtesy and an effort to help, and they've distorted it into some type of injustice. The Commonwealth's not going to be distracted from the cause in this case, which is a trial on April 1st. The court should not be distracted from the cause in this case. If they have a separate motion about Rule 14 violations or motion dismissed for misconduct, that's a separate motion. That's not the motion before the court today. The motion before the court today is to attempt to recover costs for something they chose to do and that I accommodated. It should be rejected. Thank you.
Any quick response, Mr. Jackson?
Very briefly, with the court's permission.
Sure.
By the way, it is a Brady case. There's no question that the data on those videos are Brady. They're exculpatory. That's where we start. So Mr. Brennan can say all day long, that's not a Brady case. Don't worry about it. Let's just sweep this under the carpet like we've done everything else. It's you know, there's nothing to see here. That's not true. It's a Brady case because the information that we have now received from that DVR, that NVR system, is exculpatory to Ms. Reed. That's why I cited
Brian Higgins' part.
That's why I cited the Brian Higgins part. Correct. And I suspect there's a lot more on there as well. The inverted video part is also great, which we got in the middle of trial. Mr. Brennan says, basically, his argument is, you know, deny the motion because they took a courtesy. I'm trying to be courteous. And he's a gentleman. This is not personal to Mr. Brennan. He seems to, the tone of his responses was, well, this is personal between Mr. Jackson and Mr. Brennan. It's not personal at all. This is about the defense and the Commonwealth. It's about Ms. Reed and the Commonwealth. But let's not conflate a courtesy with an obligation. The Commonwealth has an obligation. I don't care that Mr. Brennan wasn't on the case previously for the last 2.5, 3 years. It doesn't matter to me. This is not personal to him. I appreciate the fact that when he came onto the case, he immediately found in August, he found a video that had never been turned over. I can't fault him for that. He turned it over when he found it, apparently. What I can fault is the Commonwealth. Mr. Brennan was brought onto this case not to represent Mr. Brennan, but to represent the Commonwealth. And all the foibles, all the warts and blemishes that preceded him, unfortunately, are now his responsibility as lead counsel for the Commonwealth. He indicates that when he found out that we wanted to come look at the DVR, and we had absolutely no right to look at that DVR, this was just a courtesy, etc. Well, that might be true
If we hadn't made the request because we had been getting piecemeal videos from a DVR system that it supposedly was overwritten.
So the oral request by phone call you're talking about?
The latest one, right. So my request to come out and have an expert come out and see it. That's not just a courtesy. That's just good lawyering on his part and mine. You want to keep your hands clean, let's do it the transparent way. Have everybody come, bring their experts, whoever they might be, and let's download this stuff together. So there's no funny business, and everybody can wipe their hands and say, I didn't have anything to do with it except downloading the material, and whatever that material is, it is. That's just good lawyering. It's not courtesy. He was doing that to protect his own and the Commonwealth's interests, and it was quite smart until he realized, because he didn't have any way of knowing it any more than I did, that there was no footage. It had been overwritten. Certainly the defense was deceived. Perhaps Mr. Brennan was deceived as well. He indicates that he contacted Chief Rafferty, and she said, with no hesitation, bring him on out here. I wonder if that lack of hesitation had anything to do with the fact that the chief knew that there was no data on the DVR. You can come look all you want to. The bucket's empty.
That's the latest on the case of Karen Reed and the motions hearing. Of course, press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage as we continue to follow this case and many others for you here at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.